You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Pete Papaheraklis. Pete, thanks for joining us today.
Nice to be on the show, Dave.
Pete, we spoke today on the Editor's Roundtable a little bit about your article in the latest edition, number 14 of American Free Press on page 18, Jorgi Schwartz, the man behind the mess in Ukraine, Crisis in Ukraine by, of course, you, Pete Papaheraklis. And Jorgi Schwartz is, of course, better known to all of us as George Soros. Pete, this information would not be in the Zionist-controlled mainstream media, that's for sure. But what precipitated this article? I mean, what instigated you? What motivated you to write about this guy?
Well, I had written a previous article in the Ukraine, and I've been trying to, you know, keep up with what actually has been causing this turmoil there. As you know, the mainstream media, of course, presents Putin as being the bad guy and that he invaded the Ukraine, the Crimea, and that somehow he's some kind of iron-fisted Russian communist throwback to the Stalin days or something that's trying to keep the Ukraine under his control by force. That's sort of the way it's presented to us. And, you know, the first article that I had done, and I had interviewed some people and read up on it, you know, it was clear that that wasn't the case and that the Ukraine had been an integral part of Russia for hundreds of years. Kiev, the capital of Ukraine, is one of the three major cities in Russia. As a matter of fact, you know, most people don't know this. It was actually the first capital of Russia. The Ukraine hasn't really been a country until 1991. Didn't become one until then when the Soviet Union fell apart. It's always been a Russian territory. So anyway, the way it's been presented to us is that it's a completely distinct country that's sort of like oppressed by Russia. And also, by the way, the Crimeans, 97% of them voted in a referendum that was attended by like 85% of the population to join with Russia. So there was no invasion taking place here.
Right.
Yeah, so as I looked into it further, I looked into what was the real cause behind the revolution in the Ukraine. And that's how I ended up finding out about George Soros. Well, I knew about George Soros and that he's had a strong influence in Eastern Europe for a long time and in the United States. As a matter of fact, I had written an article about George Soros maybe about 3 years ago as far as how he was behind all this leftist things that was going on in the United States. He actually is the guy primarily responsible for putting Barack Obama in office.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I knew that this guy was like an arch globalist. I knew he was involved in the Ukraine. I just didn't realize to what degree that he is the main guy instigating everything in the Ukraine. And from what I was reading earlier, 50 other countries, not a dozen, 50. So this guy is huge.
Mm-hmm. When I read your article, one thing really shocked me that stood out to me. And I want you to comment on this because there's a lot of things about this guy. I mean, he's worth over 20 billion bucks. You know, some figures say 20, some say 23 billion. Hey, what's a couple billion between friends, right? But as you explained very clearly, you know, the guy's name is Jorgi Schwartz. He was a Jew, although not raised as a Jew in the strictest sense, from Hungary. And he runs Soros Fund Management. And of course, as you explained, a couple blocks away in Manhattan, this philanthropic, with quotes around it, network operating under the name of Open Society Foundation. And part of the Open Society Foundation is something called Project Syndicate. Can you, for the benefit of the listeners, explain in great detail, I don't care how long it takes, exactly what this Project Syndicate is?
Look, I don't know that much about Project Syndicate specifically. What I do know, it's one of many of George Soros' Open Society Foundations. At one point when I was researching this, there was like 2,000 of them, maybe more. And then he also funds other organizations, you know, like Acorn, MoveOn.org, all these kind of La Raza, the gay liberation organizations, all types of leftist organizations. And this Project Syndicate, apparently, is the publishing arm of his empire, which, by some accounts, has the largest amount of syndicated writers on the planet. He has something like, was it 500 newspapers in 150 countries?
Right.
70 million people. And that's only his publishing arm, not to mention all these other things he's into.
Holy, I mean, this guy is like literally probably one of the biggest publishers in the world, right?
Exactly. If not the biggest. Yeah, and you didn't even hear about him.
Right, and how many, that's what I was going to say, how many people know this?
Exactly. I mean, that sounds to me like it's bigger than Rupert Murdoch, and everybody knows him.
Oh, yeah, of course it is, because the Wall Street Journal, which he bought relatively recently, has a circulation of about 2 million, which is huge for a publication. So,
right, and he's got Fox News and a few other things, and a lot of other things, but I don't know that they amount to 70 million readers or listeners.
No way. What else about this guy? Why don't you paint a picture about what this guy's actually doing to stick his nose in Ukraine? I know some people refer to it as the Ukraine, others refer to it as Ukraine. I don't know why the has to be in front of Ukraine.
That's interesting, because I even refer to it in both ways, you know, because I see it written in both ways. And I think the Ukraine, probably a reference to the fact that it was a territory, the Ukraine, like you say, the Midwest, the Northeast of Russia. So it's the Ukraine. I was rereading some article that I had read a long time ago, and a lot of this stuff is coming together a lot better for me as far as how he got started and where these open societies came from and what his ideology is and all that. Open society refers to this concept promoted by this philosopher, this Marxist philosopher, Karl Popper. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
No, I didn't.
Well, he was this guy from Vienna, considered one of the great philosophers of the 20th century, and George Soros studied under him, not directly under him, but studied his philosophy, and one of his main concepts was called the open society. Now, what is an open society? Open society means that, and let me see if you don't mind, I have some notes here.
No, of course.
Open society was originally coined in 1932 by the French philosopher Henri-Louis Bergson to describe societies whose moral codes were founded upon, quote, universal principles seeking to enhance the welfare of all mankind, as opposed to closed societies that placed self-interest above any concern for other nations and cultures. See, so if you are a nationalist, by definition, where self-interest is above universal interest, then you are to be attacked by this concept of the open society. So it's really a philosophical, friendly way of saying the New World Order, really. They're just putting a moral high road kind of on globalization, as if the world would be a much better place if they take down the barriers that restrict societies into these isolationist type of closed societies, you see? And George Soros, my God, you know, this guy has these messianic concepts. Look at some quotes that he said. He said, "I admit that I have always harbored an exaggerated view of self-importance. To put it bluntly, I fancied myself as some kind of god, or an economic reformer like Keynes, or even better, a scientist like Einstein."
Wow.
Then he goes on to say, no, look, then he says, "If truth be known, I carried some rather potent messianic fantasies with me from childhood. Fantasies which I wanted to indulge to the extent that I could afford. Some kind of God," tossing himself as, quote, "some kind of God, the creator of everything. You know, like invincible. I was pretty invincible, benevolent. I was pretty benevolent. All-seeing. I try to be all-seeing." So he fancies himself as a god of some sorts. And then he says, "I realized as a young man that it's money that makes the world go around. So I might as well make money. But having made it, I could then indulge my social concerns. Invariably, those concerns center around a desire to change the world generally," says the author here, "and America particularly, into something new, something consistent with his vision of," quote, "social justice." So this guy justifies what he's doing by thinking that he's reshaping the entire world into what he considers to be a better world, which is pretty consistent with the Marxist, globalist, the New World Order, really. So he doesn't feel like he's destroying the world. In his mind, he's got it figured out that somehow he's doing the world a favor by breaking down all these barriers, these moral barriers, social barriers, national barriers, all the things that, you know, we hold dear, he sees as an anathema.
What about that other quote in your article, which was pretty amazing? I don't know if you went over this. "If there ever was a man," that one. "If there ever was a man who would fit the stereotype."
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, could you please read that exactly?
"If there was ever a man who would fit the stereotype of the Judeo-plutocratic Bolshevik Zionist world conspirator, it is me."
You know when he said this?
No, I could find out, but no, he's been saying things like this all along. I mean, he's not really ashamed of doing what he's doing. Like I said, he actually believes that he's doing something good to the world based on his own vision.
I mean, people don't even think about what's happening behind the scenes, like what a guy like this is doing. And as you mentioned, as we mentioned in the Editor's Roundtable, and as you mentioned when we opened the program, this was the primary person who catapulted this Barack Obama, or whatever his name is, this guy into the limelight. And that's just an amazing accomplishment, don't you think?
That in itself is an amazing accomplishment. And it's almost like a footnote compared to everything else this guy has been doing. I mean, you can't call it a footnote, really. But look, he had already set up shop in Russia also, even before the Gorbachev era. So he was even involved before the Soviet Union broke apart in setting up shop. You know, he's kind of perfected these ways of creating what he's called a Gandhi style revolution, you know, a nonviolent revolution, by having figured out how to take control of all of society's power structures, if you will, you know, the media and all these non-governmental organizations and philanthropic organizations and all these kind of things that put together give him huge amount of political power. So he was already part of undermining really the... I mean, I'm not sure exactly what brought communism down. There's a lot of factors, but he was one of them for sure. And he was instrumental in setting up these Jewish oligarchs that eventually took control of Russia. And he was also involved, if you recall, you know, where Russia's economy almost completely fell apart with all these Wall Street investors scamming the people there during the privatization process under Yeltsin, if you recall. He was 100% involved in all that. He applied these same principles in all the Eastern Bloc countries. And not even, I mean, he was behind the revolution in Georgia, in Kyrgyzstan. It was his principles that were behind the revolutions of the Arab Spring, like in Egypt and Tunisia and Libya and Syria even. I mean, this guy's amazing. He's the guy that started the whole Yugoslavian breakdown of, you know, attacking Milosevic and, you know, making him seem like some kind of a Hitler, the way they're trying to do with Putin now. So he comes across from the point of view that he supports all these popular uprisings of the people and for the rights of the people and these type of things, and uses that in order to take down governments.
Wow. I mean, I remember when some movie they were talking about this guy's playing Monopoly with real buildings, and this guy is playing with the whole world, basically. And you had told me yesterday you had likened him to a Nirvana and David Bowie song. What was that all about?
Yeah, the man who sold the world. Yeah, an excellent song, really. He talks about he came across this one guy just walking up the stairs, and he looked into his eyes, and this guy was like so evil, and he knew that it was the man who sold the world. I mean, you know, the lyrics, you know how these songs are. They don't really make sense. You know, it's like poetry. But you get the feeling of a real sinister person that's so powerful that, you know, they're the ones that sold the world. I mean, an antichrist of sorts, really.
Really, just unbelievable. What else we got on this guy?
You know, the thing that I'm trying to sort of piece together is the mechanics of how he pulled all these things off, specifically with the Ukraine now that we're looking into that. You know, what this guy had done, as I said, as he did with all these countries, was go over there from the get-go. By the way, to connect these other dots, you know, he's also involved with Brzezinski. You know, Brzezinski was also a huge political theorist, if you will. You know, he boasts that he's the guy that took down the Soviet Union.
Yeah, why don't you tell listeners who he was, what prominent positions he held?
Well, you know, Brzezinski, again, is a top globalist. He would be in the same category as George Soros, except that George Soros actually makes all this stuff happen. You know, with Brzezinski, he was a theoretician. Anyway, Brzezinski was the guy that started the Trilateral Commission, one of the three top globalist groups on the planet, back in 1973 with David Rockefeller.
Right.
And that was really, from what I understand and have read up about, it was really, and it was at the time of the energy crisis and the time that the dollar replaced the gold as the international currency, so to speak, and oil got tied in with it and all that. And it was a way, I think from that point on, they sort of developed a more comprehensive plan of how they were going to basically bring the world under their control through debt. Not that they haven't been doing that for much longer, but basically to bankrupt all these countries and bring them under their control, like we see happening today. I mean, the whole world is bankrupt. The Western world is completely indebted and enslaved by these globalist entities like the World Bank and the IMF and all these organizations. This is something that Brzezinski was in charge of starting in 73. And then in 79 or so, he boasts that he's the guy that got Russia to invade Afghanistan. I think that was in 79. Maybe it was a little bit later.
I think it was.
Yeah, exactly. And he says that that's what ended up bankrupting the Soviet Union. And then they couldn't compete with the West, you know, when, you know, Ronald Reagan supposedly got them with his Star Wars and everything. And he kind of called their bluff and they couldn't compete with us economically. And they ended up collapsing. I'm sure that's not exactly how it happened. But nevertheless, Brzezinski was instrumental in making that happen. And George Soros was right in there in picking up the pieces and bringing them under the control of the globalists in their New World Order. So this dichotomy that we used to have back in the Cold War days, to where you had the Soviet Union and, you know, United States and Europe being the superpowers, United States rather, you know, the Soviet Union part that fell apart now has been taken up by people like George Soros that has led all these revolutions into bringing all these countries under the control of the EU and NATO, you see? And that's exactly what's been happening in the Ukraine. So Brzezinski now had said that the Ukraine was a key country in this globalization game and had to be taken away from the Russians at all costs. And, you know, Ukraine is the largest country in Europe. I don't know if you were aware of that.
I actually am, yeah.
Russia, of course, is bigger, but Russia is not also in Asia. You know, all the countries that are only in Europe, Ukraine is the largest. And it's key because it's such an integral part of Russia. 66% of all the oil and natural gas from Russia into Europe flow through the Ukraine. It's definitely a key element in Putin's ability to sort of maintain the power that he has. So taking that away from him, it's clear why it's so important to the globalists. So he got in there, he got in the Ukraine and did his old shenanigans there and his tricks and started all his open society foundations, pumped billions and billions of dollars. He's apparently given $8 billion just on his own in all these organizations. Just one man, $8 billion. Yeah. Now, you probably heard of Victoria Nuland, right? She's like a she's sort of like a assistant secretary of state.
Oh, that name doesn't ring a bell.
I see. Well, she gave an interview, a televised interview, I don't know, maybe a month ago or so, to where she actually admitted publicly that the United States has invested over $5 billion.
Oh, yes, yes. Actually, okay, now I watched that whole video, but I must have missed where she did mention the money because I did listen to the whole thing. The video wasn't that great, but one of the AFP writers did a story. I don't know if it was you.
Yes.
Was it you? And that video was linked to that.
I see. Yeah, it might have been me. Yes. Although I didn't mention her name in my article, I did mention that America had given $5 billion.
Right, but I didn't hear her say it. Did you hear her say that?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Oh, absolutely, yes. And she's been quoted by many people of saying that. So the thing is, you know, when you understand, you know, I'm trying to sort of put the pieces together of how all this fits together, because you have like the CIA and you have the State Department and you have all these banking entities like the IMF and the World Bank working in tandem in bringing about the destabilization of countries like Ukraine. And George Soros' network of his Project Syndicate, which controls all the press, and then all the politicians that he's got under his control, and all these grassroots protest organizations that he's funding, he's able to orchestrate all these things together in causing these uprisings that seem like they are from the people and the will of the people, when really it's the will of George Soros, right? And of course, all these other groups like the Council of Foreign Relations and Bilderberg and the Trilateral Commission work in tandem with him and the CIA and all these other entities in creating this situation. So you had this now happening throughout the 90s. If you were to look at George Soros as having two parts of him, one being like the corporate raider, currency manipulator that just goes in and completely rapes these countries' economies and then takes that money or part of that money and uses it to further destabilize these countries. Well, Ukraine was called the breadbasket of Europe.
That's right.
Because it's completely flatlands and it grows like millions and millions of acres of wheat and corn and grains and stuff like that. So if it was left unexploited by these vultures, it would be a very wealthy country. But it's living in poverty on account of that when they stepped in there after the Soviet Union collapsed, they took away something like 80% of its economy, these oligarchs and George Soros and all these bankers. So their aim has been to bring the Ukraine under the European Union and NATO, ostensibly for its own good, to make it a democratic country and bring it up to European standards and civilization and that type of thing. But in the process, they're stealing all this money, as I said. And fast forward a little bit into the 2000s, there was an election back in 2004 where this guy, Yanukovych, the recent prime minister, was elected. Mm-hmm. And this is where you see how George Soros operates. Well, they contested the elections. He got all his little minions there, all worked up in the revolution. And it was actually termed the Orange Revolution, if you recall. What that was is that they said, well, the elections were rigged and Yanukovych stole the election. So they had the elections again. And I think he won again. And then they started crying again until the third time they put their own person in there. And that's really what they do, because he's done that throughout a number of other countries. So anyway, they put their own people, and that Yulia Tymoshenko, if you remember that one woman, she was one of...
Yeah, didn't they poison her or something?
I don't know, but she was one of the oligarchs. She was really corrupt. They ended up putting her in jail because she stole millions and billions even. She was, I think, in the oil business, and she controlled, you know, a lot of the oil assets. Yanukovych was elected again in 2010. Although he also became prime minister in the interim at some point. So you have the overwhelming majority of Ukrainians that are Russian and want to be with Russia and don't want to be with Europe at all. So Yanukovych, as prime minister, really represented the majority of Ukrainians. Well, that was in 2010 when he got reelected again. I'm sure he had his own problems. He might not have been the best guy there, but he was on the side of Putin and Russia and that kind of thing and what the people wanted. Well, in November, this past November, the EU now was really pushing him after they bankrupted the country pretty much. Then the IMF comes in and the European Union offering all these bailouts and telling them that, you know, if you get in with the European Union, you'll get all this money and all your problems will be over and what have you. And Yanukovych refused. He says, no, thanks, but no thanks. You know, Russia is going to bail me out and we have a working relationship. And that's when all these protests started. They were really a retaliation to the fact that he wouldn't sign up with the EU. And finally, they overthrew him with all these, what we think, their right-wing revolutions and Svobodan and the right sector and all these neo-Nazis and all these pro-Western people. All these are just the various hundreds and thousands of organizations backed by George Soros. So you hear in the media today that Putin is the bad guy and he invaded the Ukraine and how terrible Yanukovych was and how oppressive he was and what an authoritarian dictator he was. When really, this was just blackmail. Either you join the EU or we'll destroy your country and take it over, which is what they did. You see, and the media, anywhere you look in the media, we're placing sanctions on Putin and everything because he's interfering in the Ukraine, when really we're trying to take it away from him and basically set up NATO bases right next door to him. And the fact that he's resisting that, we're turning around calling him the bad guy, right?
Where do you think this could go, though? I mean, because now, I don't know if you saw a piece. Oh, yeah, we talked about this, actually. Russia to create national payment system. I mean, where can this go? Could this go with an invasion of Russia?
You know, gee, this gets into dangerous territory. We were talking earlier today at the editor's roundtable about this. And, you know, this almost reminds me to the sanctions that we were placing in Iran. You know, I mean, Iran, of course, wasn't making a nuclear bomb or anything like that. But we said they were and placed all these sanctions and what have you, which forced Ahmadinejad at the time to say, you know what? Then I'm going to stop accepting the dollar as the international currency, and I'm going to start accepting rubles and dinars and gold and rupees and everything else. Now, when that happens, as Victor was making very clear at the talk we had, that's sort of like the end of America, because without the ability to just print unlimited amount of dollars that the whole world has to sort of use in order to buy oil, if they cash in on all their dollars, we really can't back them up. So that's going to end up boomeranging on us to where our economy is going to fall apart, which ultimately could be what they want, you know, in order to just bring about just a global economic crisis and then move to an international currency, which has always been what they wanted. Definitely been what George Soros always wanted. I mean, one of his quotes is, "My dream and my goal before I die is to destroy the dollar," he said.
Wow.
Yeah.
This guy is bad news. It's just bad news.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else about him, Pete, that you think listeners would be interested to know as it relates to Ukraine?
You know, there's 12 countries, at least in Europe, that have come under EU and NATO control. And George Soros was behind every single one of them, including Yugoslavia, Poland, Hungary, Romania, Slovakia, the Czech Republic, Lithuania. I had my notes here because I'm preparing a more comprehensive article of, I don't know where it's going to go, but just for my own understanding anyway.
Sure.
And, you know, we talk about the effect that George Soros has had globally, but then the effect that he's had in this country is equally huge. You know, and I had focused on that on the article that I had done that said a few years ago, but just revisiting it now with the bigger understanding of who George Soros is and how powerful he is, you know, there's this one paragraph that I had here that kind of puts things in perspective and really ties in who Barack Obama is and what Barack Obama's ideology is. You see, the Marxist end of the Zionist equation here, right? It says, thus, by logical extension, Popper, he was talking about Karl Popper here, did not share the American founder's confident assertion that certain truths were self-evident and that certain rights, such as the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, as referenced in the Declaration of Independence, were, quote, unalienable and thus not subject to doubt because they had been granted to mankind by the ultimate authority of the Creator. You see, so this open society thing, it sounds like a great thing from a liberal or a Marxist point of view here, but really it's the antithesis, it's challenging the whole concept of God. So if we say, you know, there's these self-evident truths, well, as far as they're concerned, there is no such thing as an ultimate truth. Everything is open and everything has to be broken down. The paragraph continues and it says, we shall see that George Soros, as he grew to maturity, would likewise reject the founder's premise. Indeed, Soros would harbor great disdain for modern-day American political figures who displayed unshakable confidence in their own culture's nobility and who embraced the tenets of the Declaration and the U.S. Constitution as timeless, immutable truths. To Soros, Popper's greatest contribution to philosophy was his teaching that, quote, the ultimate truth remains permanently beyond our reach. So their thing is, truth is unknowable. There is no such thing as truth. And to say so means that you're an oppressive, closed society and you have to be taken down in the name of globalization and freedom of expression or whatever twisted way they put this into, you see? So it's really Marxism. It's cultural Marxism is exactly what it is, intertwined with corporate raidism. That's not the right word, you know? But basically destroying the economies and destroying cultures in the name of creating a utopian society, which is Marxism. When we look at what Obama's policies have been and what his beliefs are and who the people that put him in power other than Soros are, Saul Alinsky's and all these people, his promotion of all these oppressed minorities, quote unquote, falls into the exact same belief system as the Soros, which really equals to the destruction of America. That's really what they want.
Exactly. Just a coincidence that it happens to be another Jew.
Well, technically, he claims he's not a Jew. He says he's an atheist and doesn't believe.
No, no, no. But a Jew is inside of him.
Racially, he's a Jew. He racially. Can't change that, can he?
You can't take a Jew out of a Jew. You can't take whatever out of whatever. The fact of the matter is he's a Jew and they're called the tribe and they're called the tribe for a reason. They're called the tribe because they're all related or most of them are related genetically.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you look at all his associates, I mean, it's no accident that most of them are Jews. All the oligarchs that he put in power over there, right. They're all Jews, and Marxists in this country are primarily Jews, so there you have it.
Yeah, it's just a coincidence. Well, Pete, thanks again for taking the time out to explain this to the listeners. As always, I'm looking forward to talking to you real soon.
My pleasure, Dave. Thanks for having me on.